Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I'm confident that if the pressure stays on these people, or if we can get someone to come forward, the family has been great about keeping Emily's name in the public eye through the media and other means. As it is right now, we continue to interview everyone that pops up in terms of a source. We have received literally hundreds of names that deal with leads. A lot of these leads have turned out to be third and fourth hand information that someone has heard something from someone else about what Emily was supposed to be doing. So what it has been a major puzzle of trying to put together a lot of information that's come from a lot of different sources and narrow it down. And there are probably at this stage right now 10 to 15 people on my list that would be considered highly regarded suspects in terms of knowing what happened to her, or maybe even having knowledge of her disappearance or being involved in it. That being said, it's one thing to hear it, it's another thing to go out and prove it, and that's what we've been trying to do. So I've been trying to pull information together that can somehow tie the information that we've been receiving together to narrow it down. That's been the most difficult part because of the number of people that Emily associated with.
February 3rd, 2013 was the last time that 19-year-old Emily Heber posted on Facebook. Prior to that date, she had frequent and consistent posts. By February 6th, her phone was no longer in service. 6 weeks later, on March 26th, 2013, her grandfather reported Emily missing to the Yuma, Arizona Police Department after nearly 2 months of no contact. Emily has never been seen or heard from again. Detectives began investigating, and what they uncovered was a tangled web of shady characters, shocking stories, and more questions than answers. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 192 of The Vanished, Emily Heber's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. At just 19 years old, Emily Heber was struggling. She had lived on and off the streets for a year, where she became involved with many negative influences and became addicted to drugs. Prior to this downward spiral, Emily was a bright young woman who excelled in school and had dreams for her future. For this story, we spoke with Emily's mom, Jenny. Jenny told us that Emily had moved out 2 weeks before she turned 18. At first, she was going from friend's house to friend's house, and then she ended up living on the streets. Jenny says that she got in with the wrong crowd. She would move from crowd to crowd to group to group. Emily's mom wanted her to come home, but she also wanted her to go to rehab. That's something that Emily wasn't ready to do. Even though she was living on the streets, she always kept in contact with her family. and they always spent holidays together. Jenny remembers that in the months before her disappearance, things actually seemed like they were getting better.
At that point, that's when she was telling us that she wanted to change her life. When she came clean with us, that she was doing drugs and that she, but after my grandson was born, she just really, I don't know if that like was turning a page for her, but she just really, she came clean with us and she said she wanted to change and she wanted to change her life and, you know, get better and that sort of thing. Her junior year was probably like the best year ever. Her grades were good. She was a swimmer and a phenomenal swimmer. She could have went anywhere, any college, any university she wanted to go to. It went into her senior year and she started hanging out with a group of girls. And that's when things just started. You could just tell things were just different. You know, I was finding things in her room and, you know, that kind of thing. And there was stealing. She was starting to steal. So things obviously weren't the greatest here at home. And then that's when she decided that she was going to leave.
Jenny shared just how quickly Emily went from being a star swimmer with great grades to focusing on experimenting with drugs.
She was great in school. She thinks she's the funniest girl in the room. Very independent, like self-motivated. I could go on and on about her. I'm so proud because she's a swimmer. I was a swimmer. And her best event was the 100 butterfly. And that was my best event. And one year, it was her freshman year, and her goal was to beat my record. And she did it. She beat my record. And that's one of the pictures she has on Facebook. And that was like the most exciting moment ever. But school came pretty naturally. She had good grades. I mean, she's a good kid, you know, she's very outgoing and just all about her family. That is one thing that Emily, you just could not deny, that she, loved her grandma and her aunts and her uncles, and we're a really close family. So her junior year, she had good grades. Her swimming was awesome. She was having scouts look at her. It was just a really good year. That summer, it spiraled out of control. At that point, I was just finding, you know, marijuana in her room. And every day I would search her room every single day, and I would find stuff every single day. And so I'd throw it out, and she just started changing. So I don't really know if it was just the friends that she was hanging out with, and it just started with pot, and it just kind of, when she just started experimenting with different things, I don't know. We heard rumors that she had even went into heroin as well towards the end.
Emily's dad hadn't been involved in her life for as long as she could remember. And Jenny told us just how painful that was for Emily.
They don't have a relationship at all. It was a terrible relationship. When she was here, she would try, you know, even when she was on the streets, she would try to contact him. But it was a bad relationship. She always wanted her, it was sad. She wanted her dad's love and attention, and she just didn't have it. She didn't get it. Ever since she's been missing, I have not heard from him one time. He lives in Texas, but he did live in Yuma. He actually didn't move to Texas until after she went missing. So, but I mean, the first 5 years of her life, he wasn't even involved in her life. And then after that, it was just kind of in and out, in and out. There was no consistency. There was nothing. It was really sad. I mean, there was so many times that I would sit with her in her room and she would just cry because she just didn't understand why her dad, you know, she felt like he didn't want her. And then even being on the street, she would call him for help. And then she would call me crying because he, you know, just say, I don't approve of what you're doing and so on and so forth. But when she went missing, it's been almost 6 years and I've never spoken to him.
Emily's free fall into drug addiction and life on the streets was swift and unforgiving. She, by her own admission in her journals, was addicted to methamphetamines. She started hanging around a similarly situated crowd, and her addiction only worsened. We were granted access to Emily's missing persons file, which detailed the extensive investigation into Emily's disappearance. It was just shy of 400 pages. This gave us a unique glimpse into the life that she was living prior to the time she vanished. We asked Emily's mom to tell us about those journals.
She constantly journaled. She wrote poems, songs, just her thoughts. She would draw. You know, some of her thoughts that weren't always the best thoughts in the world, they were like very sad. She had some things happen to her when she was younger, and she wrote about those in there. Something that had happened with her cousin, that was in there. Regrets that were in there. Thoughts of, you know, like her sister, of us, that she, you know, how much she missed her family. You know, just a lot of like that type of thing.
Just a few months before she disappeared, Emily's sister had a baby. Their mom, Jenny, told us that this was a time that Emily had expressed a desire to go to rehab and get clean, but she never followed through.
She was really excited, you know, about being an aunt, and she was telling us that she wanted to change her life. She wanted to, you know, make things better. She was excited about being an aunt. She was excited about being in his life. So that was when she went missing. That's when it just didn't seem right, because she seemed like she wanted to turn her life around. There was a lot of times that we had spoke while she was, you know, out there, that I really wanted her to go to rehab. I wanted her to do all those things. But at that point, she just wasn't ready to do that. I really think that this turning point in her life, like being an aunt, that was really, she was really wanting to change.
As things began to get worse for Emily and her addiction spiraled out of control, her family became more desperate to see her and know that she was okay. Jenny told us how they were trying to support Emily while she lived on the streets without giving her money to buy drugs.
The day that she left, I had actually taken her car away from her because I had found stuff in her room. And there was a friend of hers parent, actually, that was waiting down the street that picked her up. After that, she just was like from place to place. There was one place that she had went to. It was an apartment that she was sharing with somebody. I went there and brought her some toiletry items and that kind of thing. So she had places that she was staying. And then after that, it was just random places. She even told us sometimes she was sleeping on a bench. So it was just, she just bounced from place to place. We started off helping, giving her money and that sort of thing. But then, you know, you realize what that's actually going to. So then we would just do food. We would give her food. We would do gift cards, like for different restaurants, you know, Walmart, toiletry items. I would buy like shampoo, you know, that type of thing for her. We did find out that she was selling those gift cards. There were times that she would call, and at that point, you just really don't know what to do. And she would be crying. And I just told her, Emily, we need to get you help. We need to get you to rehab. We need to do this. And then she would kind of shut down. She didn't want to do that. And that would pretty much end. I was afraid at times because we had a lot of things happen at our house. She was stealing. We had our house broken into. And I had, you know, my grandson here too. So there was just things that I just didn't want to happen here with a newborn, you know, living here. So it was really difficult. I just wanted her to get the help that she needed. And at certain points, she just wasn't ready for that. I know that my mom helped her a lot. So either she was getting money to like that way through my mom. I never gave her cash because I just didn't want it going towards the wrong thing. But I do know that she pawned a lot of things. She pawned a lot of things that she took from the house. So I really truly don't know like how she kept getting the money.
We don't know exactly when Emily disappeared, but we do know it was sometime in the late winter or early spring of 2013. Since her contact with family was, at times, sporadic, We only know when she fell out of her normal routine of calling a few times a week, which was the first week of February. By the end of March, her family hadn't heard from her in nearly 6 weeks, and she hadn't been posting on social media. So her grandfather decided it was time to call the police. We asked Jenny to walk us through this timeline of events.
Even the last 6 months, she went to, you know, holidays. We did see her a lot more. But when Jacob was born, my grandson was born, she was at the hospital when he was born. She came to visit him. Actually, I have a picture of her. The last time that I actually saw her, she was here at the house visiting him. And I have a picture of her holding him. And then that was the last time I saw her.
She was saying that she wanted to change. So I took her picture with him and she left and, you know, said, I love you and hugged. And that was actually the last time I ever saw her. I was kind of grateful for that picture because that was the last day I saw her.
And then she went to my mom's about a week later. And that was the last time my mom saw her.
But after that, it just got strange. That just wasn't like her to go that long without talking to us. Her phone had been shut off. She wasn't on Facebook anymore, which was something she did daily, hourly. So at that point, we started getting really worried.
We actually let it go about 2 weeks. And because she was so, sometimes we would hear from her, sometimes we wouldn't. So we actually let it go. Once that 2 week mark hit, we knew something was wrong. I called the police. I tried to file a missing persons report. And they wouldn't do it because of her age and her lifestyle.
We ended up putting flyers out in the places that we knew that she was living.
So what had happened was there was actually a girl found in the groves here in Yuma. And my dad went to the groves just to see, you know, and he ended up talking to the lead detective on that case. And told him about what was happening, and he took the case right then and there.
Everything was happening really fast. There were a lot of rumors, a lot of stories. They were investigating, but nothing ever really led up to the next step of finding her. After almost 2 years, they classified her as a cold case. So we hired a private detective, and he's been working on her case ever since. Hearing some of the same stories, but then getting some new stories, we have been hearing that anything from she left on her own to she was taken to Mexico to pay off a debt to she was sold to the worst thing that you can imagine.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Jenny mentioned earlier that Emily had not had a relationship with her father, who now lives in Texas. We asked Jenny if he was able to help with the search effort. This is what she had to say.
It's really strange. I don't even know how to describe it. He has been talked to. He was talked to by the police. I work at the hospital here. We were going to do swabs so we could have DNA because she's in the national database. So I had given mine, and I actually saw him from afar at the hospital. And so I called the detective that was working the case, and I said, hey, he's in town. So try to get him, you know, and he was willing to go in and do that. But that's kind of how it's been. Just recently, we've had some stories come out about him. And so the private detective that's working the case had been questioning around like his ex-wife and friends and associates. And I don't know, he's strange because he had called our private detective and said that he had just gotten off the phone with me and it was a heated conversation. And I told him that he was a suspect. And that never happened. So that's the type of things that have been going on with him. But no, he's never reached out to me. He's never tried to help. We have a reward set for information. He's never tried to do anything to help us find her. Our private detective, he was like, yeah, you are a suspect. Mike, that's his name. Mike was kind of thrown aback by that. And he was like, well, have you ever tried to help? Have you ever called Emily's mom? Have you ever called the family? Have you ever done anything? He said no. And he said, well, and there you go. That's why. I think that Dave was just trying to maybe hit a nerve with him, you know, like try to get him to see what he's doing or not doing for that matter. Oh, we had so many nights and then so many phone calls. And then when she is missing and then he still doesn't make a phone call or anything. And that's hard. It's a struggle for me because I'm like, this is your daughter.
Also missing along with Emily were her cell phone, which had ran out of minutes shortly before she went missing, and also her dog Bruiser. Jenny told us about the additional search for Bruiser when they realized that Emily was missing.
She had a little dog and I had her for the longest time. And finally she's like, Mom, I want to get her. And I said, okay, you know, you can. And that's another thing that's kind of a mystery because she disappeared and so did Bruiser. That's her dog's name. And we searched humane societies and we searched all kinds of places, but they both just vanished, just disappeared.
The day after Emily's grandfather reported her missing, on March 27th, 2013, Emily, or someone representing themselves as Emily, was stopped by the U.S. Border Patrol, attempting to re-enter the United States with no identification. She was let back in after authorities determined she was a U.S. citizen. But we were curious as to why, if that was in fact Emily, why she didn't have identification. So we asked her mom what she typically carried with her.
I mean, she had her driver's license, but she was on the streets for about a year before she went missing. She told us a few times that her stuff had been stolen, her purse had been stolen, her clothes had been stolen, you know, those type of things. So I'm not exactly sure at that time what she still had on her because she had her birth certificate with her. She had her military ID and her driver's license.
We know from reading Emily's police file that she was hanging around many people with lengthy criminal backgrounds. Many of these people were men who were much older than Emily and had spent their entire adult lives involved with drugs and other criminal activity. Most of them seemed to be constantly in and out of prison. We spoke to the private investigator hired by Emily's family. His name is David Dowell, and he's a retired law enforcement officer. We asked David to introduce himself and share what his role has been in looking for Emily.
I started working for the Heber family in March of 2015. They had contacted me. At that time, I'm a private investigator here in Yuma, Arizona. My background is I'm retired law enforcement, spent not quite, just under 24 years with the Arizona Department of Public Safety. I've been doing investigations for about 38, 39 years now of different kinds. I've been in the private investigation business for, let's say, since 2010. And the family hired me in March 2015 to start looking into Emily's disappearance. It had been classified at that time as a cold case by the Yuma Police Department due to the lack of leads and the lack of information coming in. It was about a two-year-old case at the time that I started becoming involved. Essentially, what the investigation has disclosed over the time that I've been involved is that Emily was associating with a lot of people that were in the meth world, and she was a user. She also had done some things, and she was hanging around a lot of people that just, you know, were just criminals, bad people. They were using her for different situations and doing different things. We know for sure that she had been abused and beaten by some of these people. The sources that I have developed all indicate that Emily, around these people, looked completely out of place. She was a very young, pretty girl, and she just stood out of place. And a number of people that I talked to had indicated that she just didn't belong there. It sounds as if Emily became an addict and was using meth on a regular basis. The most difficult part about the investigation is that the number of people that Emily associated with, when she left her mother's home, she essentially was incorrigible. She had been stealing from her parents. She wasn't doing what she was supposed to be doing. She was causing a lot of trouble. She was basically out on her own, stayed with a number of different people. I mean, dozens of different people. And that's one of the difficulties in trying to lock the thing down or to get a very stable accounting of how Emily spent her time and who she spent her time with. It was nothing for her to stay in maybe 4 to 5 different places in 1 week. About the longest I can find that she stayed with any one person from 2012 to 2013 was about 3 weeks or less than a month. And it invariably led to the fact that Emily was just leaving on her own, or she would be causing problems because of her addiction. She was either told to leave or she left to go with someone else. The area here in Yuma where she lived, there are any number of different sects that she was involved with, and there's a strong meth underworld here. We believe, just based on information that we've gotten, that a lot of these meth sects were controlled by the Sinaloa cartel out of Mexico. That's where they were getting their drugs from. There's a lot of people that are affiliated with that. We feel that, at least I feel, in talking to people, that I am confident that I have talked to people that know what happened to her. They're just not talking.
The case file we received from the Yuma Police Department details an investigation into Emily's disappearance that has over 170 people named of interest to the police. With this many characters in the story, we asked David to explain some of the complexities in this case.
The Sinaloa cartel operates, obviously, out of the state of Sinaloa in Mexico, and they control the drug trafficking for this particular part of the country. And it's smuggled in different forms across the United States, either through the port of entry or in other illicit means. A number of the people that Emily associated with in the Yuma area actually live up here, but they are associated with the Sinaloa cartel. And that's the information that we're getting. There's probably a good 10 names that have come to me through different sources that have identified some of the people that Emily hung around with as cartel members, lieutenants, or runners for them. They're particularly dangerous because anytime you're dealing with a cartel or drug organization out of Mexico, the bottom line is money. And anything that disrupts or interferes with their ability to make money is a target, always a big problem for them. They've been associated with a lot of murders in Mexico, also in the United States. Emily, again, probably through her youth, probably just for the fact that she was very impressionable. She associated with a lot of these people. They used her for different reasons. That pretty much, I think, sums it up in terms of how she got involved with them. We have fairly reliable information that Emily transported drugs here in the United States, around the Yuma area, to other people. She was used like that. That's pretty much what we have right now. We feel there's some definite associations with the Sinaloa cartel and the members of it that are up here in Yuma that are, you know, selling the drugs and transporting drugs. And the $50,000 that the family has put up as a reward hopefully appeals to the street level people, to people that knew Emily, that can provide information. It's a shame we have to do that to begin with, but it's a necessary evil to try to offer that money to try to get people to come forward. The people that would appeal to would definitely not be cartel members or people that associate. It would be definitely people that were around Emily, knew her, that weren't directly involved, you know, drug users, people that she stayed with, people of that nature. The cartel, with the millions and millions of dollars that they deal with, $50,000 is a drop in the bucket. I think it's going to be someone just finally having a conscience to where they're going to wake up and realize it's the right thing to do and help us out. The other thing is, I think it's going to take someone that's probably involved with her disappearance, the pressure coming down on them that, you know what, they might be the next target or the police are after them before they come forward, and basically to protect their own interests and disclose that information. But there's been no indication or evidence that Emily is not alive one way or the other. It's a local case. The federal law enforcement down here, I believe, have been extremely cooperative in trying to do everything they can. The bottom line is it involves someone who disappeared. There's different places that she could have disappeared to. There's different methods in which she could have disappeared.
Yuma, Arizona shares an international border with Mexico. David told us about the challenges of looking for Emily in Mexico.
Under the police department, the Arizona Department of Public Safety have both attempted to develop information down there with law enforcement, with both the federal, state, and the local. It's extremely difficult when you're dealing with the judicial point of the Mexican police, number one, to know who to trust. I mean, that's the big thing. You don't know who to trust. The second thing is they're down there, and they have their own problems they're trying to deal with. And when we have a case or a case is forwarded down there for information, I think it 100% depends on the relationship between the agency that's involved, particularly the case agent, and who they're dealing with. If you've got a reliable contact down there that's willing to help you and to go to certain lengths to help identify information, to find out information, you know, then you've got a gold mine. That does not always exist. In fact, I believe that rarely exists. If you're, I think, particularly at the local level with a case like this, if this were a case that involved the FBI, the DEA, things like that, it might be a little bit different, but nonetheless, you still have to have reliable information to give to them. And all we're giving them or been able to give them right now is speculation. Again, without hard information and solid evidence, there's not a lot that can be done. So we've got three different potential ports of entry. The two most likely would be the Andrade port of entry at Algodones and the San Luis port of entry. That has been some of the information that people have alleged, is that Emily was down in Mexico. She had gone down there. She had one of the tidbits of information is that she had stolen some either money or property or drugs from someone, and they took her down there to work off a debt, whether it's going to be through sex or prostitution or whatever. But that has not been confirmed in any way, shape, or form. And that is probably at least third-hand information that we've received. I've had no information at all that we can absolutely verify that, although that is, again, one of the theories floating out there.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. it's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. If you've listened to the show before, you know that many families are extorted for money in exchange for information that some stranger claims to have. David told us about several instances in which this has happened to Emily's family.
There's been three attempts. There was one, I think, prior to my involvement, but there have been two others here in the last. One was last November, and one was just earlier this year where they were attempting to extort. And essentially, we call their bluff. And it went away and nothing ever happened on it. I am 100% confident this was a complete bluff just to try to steal money from the family. And number one, evaluate the logic of what's being told to you. Secondly, don't try to deal with this yourself. Get law enforcement involved no matter what they say. Get involved with law enforcement because they are capable. They have resources that private investigators, a lot of other people don't have, the family won't have. You know, these people that are trying to extort the money from the family are always putting on this ruse. The last one was about this guy that was a good Samaritan wanting to get $7,000 from the family because he knew someone who had Emily there. He was identified. All the other stuff. It really played on the emotions that he was this guy that's trying to really help the family, and he needed the $7,000 to pay off the guy to get Emily set free. Complete bogus crap. Complete. The other attempt was last year. It came from Mexico. They called and wanted the family to send money by a MoneyGram or a wire down there. And it started off at a certain amount, and we negotiated down to where it was a significantly less amount. And we told them that we weren't going to do anything until we saw proof positive that Emily was alive with a current date. There was no way we were going to do anything and that we weren't going to go over there. And they ended up becoming frustrated and basically told us to go to hell.
Finally, we asked David what the key is to solving Emily's disappearance. This is what he said.
Is it either Emily was murdered, she accidentally overdosed, or she was taken to Mexico to work off drug debts, or she's been taken and involved in human trafficking? We can't verify any of those things at all. Yuma is about 22 miles from the Mexican border, and so we're fairly confident that she had crossed over there a number of times with people the year prior to her disappearance. Customs and Border Protection have checked records, checked their documents, their cameras, and based on my information that has come from Yuma Police Department, there's not any substantial information that indicated that she had crossed in and around the time period that she disappeared. There have been other murders of young women down here in Yuma County, 4 to 5 other murders that I've also looked into in terms of trying to figure out who was involved. Some of those people were arrested for those murders and are in jail now. Probably the bottom line as we speak today is that we have a lot of information. We continue to try to corroborate the information that we've already got and information that comes in. We have a Facebook page. It's to help us find Emily Heber. And we get a ton of information that comes through there. We get a ton of information from calls. It's just a matter right now of trying to narrow it down and find that individual or those people that will come forward and provide us with the information that we need.
The private investigator described just how difficult this investigation has been because of the number of people involved. And Emily's mom expressed the same sentiment.
When the police were investigating in the very beginning for like the first 2 years, and now that our private detective has been investigating, they both have said Emily made it very difficult. It's a very difficult investigation because she bounced around from group to group. She didn't really stick with just one group. So I don't know if she just met these people out there and she just kind of went with befriended people. She had the personality that she always wanted to be accepted. You know, she wanted everybody to like her. So I don't know if that's how she met with, I mean, all of these people. There are so many people we've interviewed. And even since the police investigation, Dave has just interviewed that much more. People that have come forward, it's like they know this is what happened to Emily. They know this is where she's at. They know, but we just can't get the information from those people to get us that much further, whether it's just something they heard or it's just a rumor I overheard. We can't get that. I heard it from that actual person or I was actually there. You know what I mean? That type of information to just let us get to that next step. We just can't get there.
As with the extortion attempts, it seems like every missing person's case is surrounded by rumors. Emily's mom, Jenny, shared what some of the rumors are in Emily's case.
We've had a lot of rumors. We actually had been talking to, through our private detective, he had, you know, different people that he associated with. We had one rumor that they had seen a white girl just, you know, kind of strolling along the streets, and they called her La Gringa. And so everybody thought, this could be her. You know, she wasn't all there. She was always on drugs, not really quite, just not all there. Well, it ended up being a dead end. It wasn't her. They actually were able to get enough law enforcement involved that they went in to that city. And it was a small little city, and they found her. It wasn't her.
In addition to the rumors, we asked Jenny what kinds of tips and leads they've been receiving in the search for Emily.
We have information coming in all the time. It's the same kind of thing. We get information. Our private detective is working constantly. He's getting phone calls. We're getting information on our Facebook page. One of the recent ones, which we've heard in the past, just different places in Mexico, but we got another one. There was a sighting in Mexico, and then it's that somebody did something to her, and we've heard stories that she was buried somewhere or, you know, those type of things. We get a lot of comments, the private comments on Emily's page on the Help Us Find Emily Heber, and they want to make sure they're confidential. They don't want anybody to know that we've talked to them, and our private investigator really lets them know that we don't tell anybody their names. If they give us names and takes us to another name, that name won't know, you know, where we get it from. But yeah, we do have a lot of people concerned. Just recently there was a body found in Mexico, and you get that feeling like, oh my God, is this it? We have people sending us pictures of girls. I open it up thinking, oh my God, is this going to be her? Is this going to be her? And it's not her. You know, I'm so thankful to everybody that's following the page, and they're just being, I mean, we get information all the time.
But yes, you get that feeling and you're just like, it's those pictures. I just really want those pictures to be her. Like she's in Mexico or she's here or she's there. Unfortunately, it's just not.
You've heard me cover so many cases where the family is not satisfied with the efforts of law enforcement to search for the missing person. This is not the case in Emily's story. So we asked her mom, Jenny, to share what the police have been doing.
They have been amazing. The first couple years, we had a phenomenal lead detective on it. He did everything that I don't know what else he could have possibly done, but he retired, and then we got a new detective, and she was just working the stories that he was working, and then they just came to a point where they didn't have the manpower to keep the investigation going as strong as it was going, and or, you know, just to keep the manpower on it, and so that's when they classified her as a cold case. After that, I mean, there's been some things that have come in there, but they said, you know, they told us they would actively investigate any new leads that came in, and they have. But other than that, that's about it. We actually had, this was what blew us away. We had a psychic who said that she knew where Emily was, and she was in Vegas. We had many conversations, and she actually drove down here, and on her own. We didn't pay her. We didn't give her any money. We didn't do anything. She came down here, and law enforcement, our police department, they were all on board. They took her out to where she said Emily could be. They had a lot of manpower. They brought out a backhoe. They actually brought dogs out. I mean, it was a big deal. It was a really big deal. It didn't lead us anywhere, but I mean, that's kind of like, that just was shocking to me that they were so willing to do all of this work. And this was just off of a psychic's information. But it was the information that she was giving that led up to them deciding, hey, you know what? We might need to check this out kind of thing. They've worked well with my private detective as well. They have a good relationship with him too.
We were fortunate enough to not only receive a very detailed and thorough police file, but we were also able to speak with a detective currently assigned to Emily's case, Detective Melissa Norred. When we spoke to Detective Norred, we asked her what she does and what she's learned about Emily's story in the course of her investigation.
I'm Detective Melissa Norred with the Yuma Police Department, and I work in the Violent Crimes Unit of the Investigations Division. And we handle homicides, missing persons, robberies, those types of cases. As far as Emily, she, as far as I know, did well in school, was doing great up until the point that, you know, drugs started entering her life. Once she did get into it, it just spiraled very quickly for her. And, you know, there's people we've talked to that said, we've told her, go home, get out of this. This isn't the place for you. I think a lot of people with her, and the actions she did, you either loved her or you hated her. It was either she did you wrong or they just really, really liked her and didn't want to see her in that situation. So they want to help. And, you know, her family has had the information out there so much and done interviews. And, you know, it's hard to watch a mother or, you know, anybody in the family. They just want to find her. So there's people that, you know, want to give us information and just say, you know, I feel bad for the family. I want them to have closure. So a lot of them have called, you know, that's their reason, you know, behind a lot of them when they hear something, even if it's something that doesn't lead us anywhere, something we've already heard or something very minute. It's just, you know, the comment has always been, I feel bad hearing this and not saying something that I want closure for them. So I think that's a big motivator for a lot of people in this community. She wasn't really known to us until this case. She was involved in, I believe it was a shoplift from a local store. I don't recall that she was actually a suspect in it, but there was a group of people there, and she was one of them that was there.
You've heard Private Investigator David Dowell discuss how many people seem to have a hand in Emily's disappearance. Detective Norred shared some of the same concerns.
It's kind of been a wide variety of things. There's people that are associated with each other or know people from different groups. And so they've heard of it, especially now if we get information and have to speak to someone. It's been all over the media. Everyone in Yuma knows about Emily Heber being missing. So they've heard rumors, heard different things. So early on, it was pretty much divided. Now, kind of everyone's always heard of it, but maybe not necessarily know her. So we are within 20, depends on where you're at in town, but within 20, 25 miles of the border, the U.S.-Mexico border. We have a couple different entry points into the U.S. located near us. And we do have our population changes throughout the year. So we have a lot of elderly people, winter visitors that come here for the winter. Also during that time, we have a lot of migrant workers that will come here. So our population doubles, almost triples during the wintertime, and then changes, of course, summertime. We do have several different smaller towns that are within, you know, a few minutes of driving leading towards the border. We also border California as well, with the Colorado River just basically separating our city and California. There's quite a wide array of people, issues as far as borders, states, countries, stuff like that near us.
Another complicating factor is that we don't know for sure exactly when Emily disappeared. Her last Facebook post was February 3rd, 2013. Her family reported the date of last contact as February 6th, 2013, as this was the last time her phone was on. U.S. Border Patrol reported that Emily applied for reentry to the United States from Mexico on March 27th, 2013. Detective Norred discussed this confusing timeline with us.
There has been some discrepancies as far as when did she exactly go missing. Part of the reason early February was chosen is because the family said that was the last time they had heard from her. And according to her Facebook page, that was the last time they had talked to her. We're unaware as to the exact date that she did go missing. The Mexico thing, as far as I know, there was no ID. I can't verify it for sure if that was her or not during that time. As far as her contact with family and when she, how often she would contact them or visit them or they would hear from her, due to that drastic change in that contact with the family, it leads us to believe that she's probably deceased or not physically able to contact us or contact her family or have any association with the outside world, whether or not that means she's being held somewhere, she's deceased, anything like that. You know, we don't know till we find her.
While reading Emily's file, it became clear that there were a handful of scenarios as to what could have happened to Emily, spreading around the different circles she had been hanging around in. People would report hearing that Emily was taken to Mexico to pay off a drug debt, or she was killed because she stole money or drugs from someone, or she was killed because someone thought she was a snitch, or she overdosed and it was covered up. These stories would change slightly with each person who spoke to the police. Investigators kept trying to find evidence to corroborate these stories, and they just ran into dead ends over and over.
After being this long, the problem that we have is we have rumors that continue to go around, and if people hear it and it's stuff that has already come in two or three times, but you know how you play that telephone game back in school, and by the time you get around the circle, the story is completely changed. So we do have that issue come up sometimes where the story is similar, there's some subtle differences, which, you know, changes it, and then we have to go back, follow that up, and we end up at a dead end again. So, you know, sometimes it's just rumors and gossip, but I would rather have things come in and follow up in case it is the one that leads us to solving it than not having that.
Emily was at a difficult place in her life. Her family was trying to help her, but they were also trying not to enable her drug use. Emily needed to get into rehab, but she just didn't seem ready for that yet. Detective Norred explained that even though Emily was at a tough place in her life, that doesn't make her any less worthy of being found.
As a parent, I know that's got to be hard, especially when you're trying to maybe teach them a lesson, you're trying to get them out of it, you're doing what you can and not knowing if it's the right decision, and next thing you know, your child is missing, and you just want to find out what happened at this point. Of course, the end result would be finding who did it and getting a conviction and doing those things. At this point, I want to just find her first and go from there. It doesn't matter who it is. If somebody is missing, whether they're from a decent family, whether they had a hard time, whether they have a history, they have a record, they have drug use, no matter what it is, a person deserves justice, and we need to find them, and we need to do that for them. At this point, we become the ones who speak for them and find that justice, and that's what we want to do. Somebody needs to speak for Emily, and somebody, we need to find her. And, you know, every family has their tragedies and different things that occur in their lives. Like I said, everybody deserves justice, but I think it's important to say that because I think people don't realize that this could happen to their child. I know plenty of people who have kids that are doing well, and then suddenly, you know, just something happens and clicks and everything changes in their world. And that this is just one of those families, and it can happen to anybody, no matter how protective you are of your children, what you do, it can happen. You have to consider those things and how you would handle them. And unfortunately, you can't relate to those things until it does. It's kind of like when you're young and they tell you when you become a parent, you'll understand. Well, this is kind of one of those things. You're a parent, but then this happens. You will never understand losing a child or having this type of thing happen, whether it's just drug abuse and they're still with you or they're missing. You will never understand until you have to go through that and go through the agony of second-guessing yourself, not seeing them every day, wondering what happened to them.
At the end of our conversation, we asked Detective Norred what anyone with information about Emily should do.
78 Crime is our anonymous tip line. So anybody who has information, if they don't want their name to be known, they can call in to 78 Crime and leave the information for us on any of the crimes that we have, you know, that have been committed in our community. There is a reward out there for certain ones if it leads to the arrest or closure of a case. And it's just a way to give somebody another way to call in if they're either fearing any type of retaliation, they just don't want their name, they don't want to be associated, they can call into that line and do it anonymously. I mean, we will always continue to follow up when if we get information and do those things, but I think getting those definitive answers as to what actually happened to Emily is going to take finding her. Unfortunately, there's been stories that have led us in all different directions as far as people that were involved. Generally, in our area, we see people, if they're associated with one certain gang, a certain group, different things, they stick with that group. Emily did not do that, which makes this case even more complicated because she hung out with people from different groups, different social groups, different gang-related associations, multiple ones. That this is something that has affected our community for several years now. And of course, the family, every time, you know, the anniversary date comes up, the holidays, her birthdays, everything is very hard for them. And, you know, we've put a lot of effort into this case too, and it's important to us. And we just want to see closure to the family and get some type of answers for them. So anybody with information, we're always want to receive that.
So what happened to Emily Heber back in 2013? Did she overdose and someone felt the need to hide her body? Did she go to Mexico to try to get a fresh start? Or was she taken to Mexico against her will, as some informants have suggested? Did someone kill her over a drug debt, as rumors have said? Was she killed because someone thought she was a snitch? And what about her dog, Bruiser? This is a story with a lot of sketchy characters, rumors, and unanswered questions. It became clear to me while reading her file that Emily did not belong in the circles she was hanging out in. She was used and abused by many of these much older men, who were all hardened criminals. Emily was just 19 and was way over her head with these dangerous people. I think most of these scenarios could be possible outcomes in this case. The problem is that there just isn't any physical evidence to back up these stories or rumors. Those speaking to investigators aren't necessarily the most credible people. Their memories of times and dates seem foggy due to drug use. My hope is that someone who has knowledge of where Emily is will come forward with concrete evidence to help solve this case. At the time of her disappearance, Emily Lynn Heber was 19 years old and may have gone by the street name Hippie. She was approximately 5'6" tall and weighed around 115 pounds. She has brown hair and green eyes. though her hair may be another color. Emily has a green cross tattooed on her back. If you have any information about the disappearance of Emily Heber, please call the Yuma Police Department at 928-373-4686. You can follow Emily's story on social media at Help Us Find Emily Heber.
My main concern is just getting her home. My thoughts are, you know, she doesn't deserve to be out there like that. And so I just want her home where she belongs. We do have a reward of $50,000 for the information leading to finding Emily.
You know, I get that question all the time, you know, you as a mom, you know, what do you think? What do you feel? And because of how things are going, you know, with all the different rumors and stories and nothing's like brought us to that next step, I can't allow myself to go there because I don't know, you know, I don't have anything telling me one thing or another, though. It's hard not to, because Emily, so especially with how close, you know, our family is and her nephew, that she just could not wait to be an aunt. It's just not her. So you have no choice but to think that either, you know, something happened to her or somebody has her. It's hard not to think that way, but I just can't let myself get there, because if I let myself get there, then I feel like I'm going to lose what's keeping me going. We're not going to give up, and we can't give up. And I just feel like if I went there, then I would kind of lose it. I say prayers every day. I light a candle every day for Emily. I have a candle holder that has her name on it, and I've done this every day. Every day I light a candle, and every day I say the prayer, you know, to let today be the day, you know, that we find her, or let today be the day that we get the information that we need to find her.
That brings us to the end of episode 192. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Mississippi. Thanks for listening. Hey Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
your favorite coffee shop down the street, to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.